from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, I posed a question before we went to the break. Are routine pelvic exams unnecessary for healthy asymptomatic women? Long considered fundamental to a well woman's visit to her physician, there were some 62.8 million visual and manual examinations of women's reproductive organs, otherwise known as pelvic exams, in 2010. And though stating that it continues to believe in the clinical value of pelvic examinations, the American College of Physicians guidelines, which were published Monday in the Annals of Internal Medicine, acknowledges that no current scientific evidence supports or refutes an annual pelvic exam for an asymptomatic, low-risk, non-pregnant adult patient, suggesting instead that the decision about a pelvic exam can be one made between patient and health provider. In this forum segment, we take up the debate. Joining us is Barbara Levy. She's with us from the nation's capital. She's vice president of health policy for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And Dr. Levy, good to have you. Welcome.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, as I said, and also glad to have George Sawaya, who's here with us in studio, MD, professor of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive sciences at the University of California, San Francisco, and the co-writer of the editorial accompanying the American College of Physicians paper. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me here.
Glad to have you here, and let's begin by talking about why it's necessary, for example, to go on record here as saying asymptomatic women shouldn't have pelvic exams, or it's not even necessary. I guess you found some harm and distress, uneasiness about these exams largely?
Well, first of all, I want to just clarify my position on this. I was asked as an editorialist to comment on the American College of Physicians guidelines and their conclusions. I'm not a member of that group, but they asked me to, and a colleague of mine, Vanessa Jacoby, to think about this from a gynecologic perspective and to clarify some of the issues around it. And I think that this is part of a trend that has been going on for many decades in the U.S. to try to understand the benefits and harms of all the preventive measures that we do to healthy people. And it's mainly in with a goal of trying to make sure that the benefits outweigh the harms. And so,
and we don't know that. We don't have the answer to that?
Well, that was what the American College of Physicians commissioned an evidence review to try to understand what we actually know about the benefits and harms. And it's the conclusion of that review showing that there was the absence of evidence of benefit and there was evidence of harm that led them to make this current recommendation.
Would it be, I'm just asking you as a physician and a gynecologist now, would it be better to err on the side of concern about what the benefits might be or, for that matter, even greater concern about what the harms might be?
Well, there's a certainly, there are two camps in medicine, I think. There's the camp of physicians who believe that we operate from the first ethical principle of medicine, which is the do no harm principle, and that if we're going to do something to healthy people, that we have to really be quite sure that there is evidence of benefit and that that evidence of benefit outweighs the harm.
And this yearly ritual actually does cause some harm. I mean, frequently women complain about anxiety, about pain, about embarrassment, about also, as I said, distress of very different kinds of – and yet there was an editorial in the Washington Post by a woman who said, I had first-stage ovarian cancer. If I hadn't gone in for my pelvic exam, it never would have been detected.
Right. So you're right. There are certainly some downsides to the exam. The ones that we also have to think about that are more tangible are that women are found to have lesions or masses of the ovary that or the uterus that may lead them down a diagnostic path that may eventually lead them to surgery. And we know that surgery has its harms. And if that surgery was done in retrospect unnecessarily, we have to be accountable for those harms. That has to be part of the equation. So it's all this bigger picture of not just the harms that because it may cause discomfort, but also the harms that may accrue from these investigations and surgery.
Well, the article by mainly doctors in internal medicine from the American College of Physicians points out that they say pain and discomfort were actually mentioned by 60% of women of childbearing age who went through just the annual ritualistic rite, as you call it, R-I-T-E, of pelvic exams. And there's a lot of distress, particularly for women who had sexual abuse or experienced that, for women who were terribly obese. So again, you have to weigh, as you say, and it's a difficult process. Let's have Barbara Levy weigh in on this, who's Vice President of Health Policy at the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. From your perspective, these pelvic exams are necessary, even though the national medical bill I read yearly is about $2.6 billion, just to put it in a monetary perspective for a moment, Dr. Levy?
Well, first, I would refute the cost of adding a pelvic exam to a routine annual visit anyway. So I'm not sure what the source of that calculation was. But
so again, the paper that appeared in the Annals of
Medicine. Correct.
Yeah.
I understand that, but I need to understand where they came up with that number. But more importantly, it's a question of looking at the evidence that was reviewed. So the evidence for benefit that they looked at was evidence to show a reduction in mortality or severe morbidity. But the reality is that, and no one would dispute, I'm not disputing the analysis of that evidence. I don't think that there's a practicing obstetrician gynecologist who thinks that the pelvic examination adequately screens for ovarian cancer. We don't screen for ovarian cancer with pelvic exam. That is not to say that there's not a great deal of value to the examination itself. So just because we were unable to find in papers evidence for a mortality benefit does not mean that there aren't quality of life things, incontinence, sexual dysfunction, hormonal issues with the skin of the vulva, sexually transmitted conditions, other things that we can find at the pelvic examination that were not evaluated in the assessment of the evidence. And that's what is so different, I think, between our two perspectives. We don't dispute or disagree with the analysis of the evidence that they looked at, but the absence of that kind of evidence does not translate into a conclusion that there's no value to the exam.
Well, isn't there? I mean, it has proven to some extent, hasn't it, to be an effective way to detect gynecological cancers, or as you suggested, venereal disease, pelvic inflammatory disease. I'm just looking at a number of things, bacterial infection. There is a list. So when they say what outcomes does the exam actually prevent, I think that's quite answerable, isn't it?
I think it is. And I think to some extent, it depends on your definition of an asymptomatic person. And I know in my clinical practice, and I've been in gynecologic practice for over 30 years, that women who come in for their quote-unquote well-woman exam actually have a laundry list of issues and concerns, some of which they will tell me in the beginning while she's still dressed before we talk about an exam, and some of which she is so embarrassed about, or they're so sensitive, that it takes that connection that's happening during an exam for her to bring them up. Or it may be that I notice something on exam, like the position of the tube that goes from her bladder to the outside. I might notice something that prompts me to ask her a question, and then we have a conversation about leaking urine or something else. So there are values to the exam that are subtle, that are difficult to study, and would not translate into an evidence analysis that was done by the authors of this paper. But that black hole where we have no definitive evidence in the experience of obstetricians and gynecologists tells us that there's still value to that exam.
Let me go to you on that, Dr. Sawaya. What about the importance of, the exam as a prod to health or opening a communication with the gynecologist and, finding things that wouldn't necessarily be part of an asymptomatic well woman?
Well, I think that, first of all, I'm very glad that the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has made more definitive statements about the value of the exam or what the intention of the exam is, because it's been quite unclear until very recently. So now that that is clarified, I think it would be important to know whether or not gynecologists are adept at doing exactly the things that are now being discussed, and whether or not women feel like that is in their best interest, and that's something that they value and desire as part of their well woman visit. So I think it does prompt other questions about whether or not just the reasoning that we've just heard really is reasonable, and even if there is that benefit, whether or not that still outweighs any of the harms, because we do end up detecting things that in retrospect we wish we had not.
And you would say what, Dr. Levy, to that?
Well, I would say that, you know, harm sounds like a terrible word, and we need to think about the magnitude of the harm. I would not, you know, there's no question that doing unnecessary surgery is a harm. So it's a question of how we react to the findings that we have and what kind of assessment we will make going forward. So we definitely need to have an algorithm that says, based on these findings, these are the things we're going to do to mitigate those harms. And I wouldn't disagree with that at all. But what we do need to understand is that there's a lot of subtlety in the art of medicine. There's a lot of important connection between a woman and her healthcare provider that the examination gives us an opportunity to find. And I would say that with respect to trying to study these things, you know, aggressively in an evidence-based manner, some things are going to be difficult to fund in a study. And yes, in an ideal world, we would have studies to inform everything that we do.
Well, let me take this opportunity to invite listeners, and especially like to hear from women who have either found value or wonder about the value and question the value of the annual pelvic exam. We can hear from you now by phone. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. So feel free to join the conversation now with any questions or comments you might have. Again, toll-free 866-733-6786 is the number to call. And there are other ways to communicate with us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Barbara Levy, MD, with us from Washington, D.C., Vice President of Health Policy with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and George Sawaya, MD, Professor of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences, with us in studio. And he's at the University of California, San Francisco, and co-wrote the editorial accompanying the American College of Physicians paper. Dr. Levy, are we also, I have to ask you, because a friend of mine, a good friend of mine who happens to be a gynecologist, said that there's maybe some kind of a division here between those who report for the American College of Physicians, who are mainly in internal medicine, and practicing gynecologists. I don't want to get into turf warfare or anything like that, but it seems to me that what he said made a great deal of sense. At least the American College of Physicians aren't doing these annual pelvic exams. Many of them do internal medicine, and they're not doing gynecology.
Well, so I actually think that patients will choose to see a gynecologist when they have some of these underlying subtle or embarrassing issues that they hope we'll find and talk about on an exam. So I think we're seeing different populations of women, and that a woman who chooses to see her general internist or a family practitioner for her one-woman visit probably is asymptomatic with respect to some of these issues. She would not choose to see an internist if she had those embarrassing things she wanted to talk about. She's more likely to choose a gynecologist. So I do think we see different populations, and that means that our experiences are quite different as we look at the value of the exam.
And George, so I see things that way, or a different perspective?
No, I absolutely agree with that. I think the perspectives are very different, and I think that that could account for the difference of opinion in terms of this particular issue.
Well, let's find out what our listeners have to say. We'll begin with a caller from Oakland. Andrea, join us, please. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to say when I was 26, I'm sorry, I get emotional. I missed a one-woman exam, and I was discovered to have two dermoid cysts, one in each ovary, that were the size of grapefruits, and it was terrifying. So, you know, it was important. I didn't realize that I had missed an exam when the doctor asked me when was my last one. I said, oh, last year, I'm sure. But it hadn't been last year, and I had to undergo surgery. They were so big, they couldn't even do them through the belly button. They had to actually cut me open, so I have that scar.
Well, thank you for that call. And, George Sawaya, probably, I mean, this is not anecdotal. We probably hear a lot of stories like this, don't we, from patients?
Right. Well, you know, certainly one of the things that we find on the exam are asymptomatic ovarian processes. And the concern about that is that they may rupture, they may twist, they may cause surgical emergencies. And so this is what prompts us to do surgery in those patients. And we talk about this a bit in our editorial because this is an acknowledged potential benefit. This would all have to be put into that context of the possible benefits, and think about that in the context of the harms as well.
Could you say something more about the benefits, Barbara Levy, like the one that caller just alluded to?
Well, I think certainly being able to have minimally invasive surgery for smaller lesions and avoiding, as Dr. Sawaya said, the urgent or emergent consequences of some of those masses, if they're undiagnosed and they show up in the emergency room with a leaking cyst or twisting, those are all benefits that the study did not look at.
We're going to bring some more of our callers on, and we'll go next to Janice in Sebastopol. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just going to share an experience that a very good friend of mine had. She called for her normal annual exam, and her physician was on vacation, and they said, well, you can see his associate. And she just said, no, I think I'll wait till he comes back. She went in and had her exam, and her gynecologist said, you know, there's a mole here that I don't remember being here in the past. I think we're going to take a biopsy. And she ended up having melanoma of the vulva. And she felt like if she'd seen the other gynecologist, he wouldn't have known that the mole was there and not there. But her gynecologist recognized it, and it saved her life.
Thank you for that call, Janice. Good to hear from you, hearing from a lot of people from their experiences or experiences of those they love or know. And we'll go to a caller in Arkansas. Lisa, driving along the freeways in Arkansas, are you?
I'm actually in Iowa right now on my way to Minnesota.
Oh, but you are from Arkansas. I got it.
From Arkansas, yes, sir. When I was about 40, I'm 46 now, I had a hysterectomy. And a couple of years after my hysterectomy, I went into my primary care physician, who was a new physician for me, and told him that, you know, here I am for my annual pap smear and pelvic exam. And he refused to give me one. He said, you have had a hysterectomy. You no longer need pelvic exams. And I would just like to hear your guest's opinion on that and if they have any other comments on why he would say that.
Well, I don't know if we can read the doctor's mind, but go to you on this, George Sawaya.
Well, yeah, maybe this is more of an ACOG question because ACOG does address this specifically in their guidance for clinicians about the use of bimanual exams in women who've had a hysterectomy. So maybe I'll turn
that over. Go to Barbara Levy. He's deferring to you, Barbara Levy.
Well, first of all, she doesn't need a pap smear. She doesn't have a cervix, and so screening for cervical cancer is definitely not something that we would recommend. There's a distinction between women who've had a hysterectomy and had their tubes and ovaries removed versus women who have not, because if she's had a hysterectomy and her tubes and ovaries have been removed, then the portion of the exam where we're feeling for the uterus and the tubes and ovaries clearly is not terrifically helpful. There's still value, though, in visually looking at the vulva, as your previous caller talk to us about. That's, we think, important. And also the position of the urethra. Women who've had hysterectomies can still suffer from leaking urine, from bowel problems, from sexual dysfunction. So we still think that there's some value to portions of the examination, even if she's had a hysterectomy.
This is this pelvic exam has often been linked closely with, as you sort of alluded to a moment ago, cervical cancer screening. What about that in terms of the benefit side? Dr. Levy?
So cervical cancer screening is definitely something that needs to be done in women over age 21 and under age 65 in general. We now know, though, in 2014, what actually causes cervical cancer, and we're able to do some testing that's much more specific than what we were able to do in 1952 when Dr. Papanikolaou designed the original pap smear. So we no longer recommend annual pap smears. Pap smears need to be done for women with a cervix on average every 3 to 5 years. And that's partly what has prompted some of this discussion, I think, that we are no longer recommending an annual smear. And that raises then the question about whether there needs to be an annual visit and an annual examination without the smear.
And if I could go back to you, Dr. Sawaya. George Sawaya, again, is a professor of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive sciences, University of California, San Francisco. And Dr. Barbara Levy is the vice president of health policy for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Dr. Sawaya, how much do we know how much unnecessary surgery is done as a result of these pelvic exams?
Well, that's one of the missing elements. I will say in the systematic review, they believe that the likelihood of that was about 1.5% of women who were screened that would have an unnecessary surgery. But the data is really quite scant. And even in our editorial, we were a little we were surprised a bit that the absence of evidence in, for some groups could mean a negative recommendation. In some ways, you could say that the absence of evidence of both benefits and harms might prompt more research about the benefits and harms to make a more evidence-based.
If the money was there for the research. Yeah.
Well, that's a very good question, because we also go on to say that would it be feasible to do these types of studies? Very much what Dr. Levy says, or what are the outcomes? How measurable are they? Would it be feasible? How many tens of millions of dollars would we need to answer the question? Or do we have enough information about just the credible magnitude of the benefits and the possible magnitude or probable magnitude of the harms to make a judgment about that balance right now to make a recommendation? And I think that's what the American College of Physicians did. They did a little projection. And they thought, well, they didn't foresee this being a positive recommendation and went ahead and made that recommendation to not include that as part of the visit.
Well, what about that credibility of that figure that Dr. Levy seems skeptical about? I don't know how they derived that. They said national medical bills for yearly pelvic exams amount to $2.6 billion.
Well,
there's
no
way to know that number. So you can't code for a pelvic exam separate from the rest of the annual encounter. So I'm just curious about how they came up with that.
Well,
number.
That's why I'm asking Dr. Sawaya. Maybe he has some. You have any insight into that more than
I don't. I mean, it's when any time we're trying to understand costs of anything in the U.S. health system, it becomes very unclear exactly who's paying and how much anything costs. So it becomes a very difficult question to answer.
And those figures often are very shifty and subjective. I would agree. Let me go to Ann as our next caller. Ann, you're on. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 62 years old. I'm a pharmacist. I've been in the healthcare Western medicine practice for 40 years, and it's my observation that evidence-based medicine just doesn't always cut it. If you look at things like blood pressure and cholesterol, they're always changing their mind. And there's the part of medicine that is the art. It's the relationship between the patient and her doctor. I don't like to get pelvic exams, but I know that with my doctor, I'm going to get a more complete evaluation, and I agree with the prior comment that was made that, oh, you go, oh, right, I've had this problem or I've had that problem, and you start finding a solution. So there is the common sense part of medicine that has to be paid attention to, and that's what I call the art of medicine. And second, being a pharmacist, I can tell you if insurance companies can find a reason not to pay for something, they will do that. So these studies can be potentially very harmful.
Thank you for that call. And here's an email from Karen who says, I find the study that your guest is referring to is ludicrous at best and harmful at worst. In addition, studies such as this just give insurance companies fodder for denying coverage of annual gynecological exams for women. Harm? Ovarian cancer is usually completely asymptomatic, and annual exams save lives, period. Out of curiosity, how many of the authors of this paper were men? Do we know the answer to that, Barbara Levy or George Sawaya?
I can look it up, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Dr. Sawaya's comment. In the paper, they do talk about 1.5% unnecessary surgeries, but that's how many surgeries were done for things that were not cancer. And that doesn't necessarily mean they were unnecessary surgeries. They were surgeries for non-cancer, but as he and I have been talking about, there are benefits to doing surgery for conditions that are not cancerous but could still be quite harmful to a patient.
I should mention here, by the way, I'm looking at the paper, courtesy of Dr. Sawaya, and there are two male names and two female names, just for the record, on the paper that was put out, again, by the American College of Physicians. Here's a listener who writes, I have a screening anecdote which went the other way. A friend of my aunt's went in for a routine colonoscopy. The doc perforated his colon, and the friend spent a few days in a hospital before they found the perforation and could repair it. My friend almost died, lost around 35 pounds, and spent months regaining his strength. And no, he didn't have cancer. Screenings are not always 100% benign. I think that women and men should have access to these types of studies, like you're discussing, so that they can work out the balance for themselves. And we're going to go to the Hoosier State, Indiana. Maya joining us from Indiana. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, first of all, it's absurd that a colonoscopy would be likened to a pelvic exam. The risks for colonoscopy are much higher. I'm a medical writer. And the notion that women should not have a pelvic exam is absurd. Why would you eliminate that part of the body? The way that you practice medicine is by looking. I want my gynecologist to look at the quality of the tissues, to feel the organs, and also I would insist on a rectal exam every time I go to the gynecologist. Who else is going to do that? It's an important screening for anal cancer. Men don't complain about, or they do complain about their prostate exam. That's uncomfortable, but it's also essential. And if you screened people about going to the dentist, I bet more than 60% of them would say that going to the dentist is uncomfortable. That doesn't mean that the dentist, there should be a study saying, well, therefore going to the dentist has no value.
Okay. I thank you for that call. That's Maya from Indiana. And we've got to wrap this up. I'm just wondering if we can get a final word just in seconds from you, Dr. Sawaya.
Oh, well, yes. Well, thank you. It's so interesting that the personal stories of patients are really important. We haven't really heard any personal stories about people who had a harm from being in a prevention mode. But certainly as a gynecologist for 25 years, I can tell you I've certainly seen those and been party to some of those. And this is, in some ways, what prompts us to think about both the benefits and the harms.
Last word, Barbara Levy.
I would just say we have no evidence that a parachute is a beneficial thing. I think pelvic exams are in general beneficial to women and far outweigh the harms.
Thank you, Barbara Levy. Thank you, George Sawaya. Thank you, our listeners. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.